What's going on, folks? Welcome back to the Go With The Flow NHL and Blackhawks podcast brought to you by The Sports On Tap. These are the Sant Chicago Hockey guys. I'm Nick Phillips, joined by my line mate as always up in the great white north of Minnesota, Danny Maritz, buddy. It's been a couple weeks. We've had some work and travel, traveling obligations, but nice to see that lettuce looking good, bud. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Glad to be back. talking another week. Yeah, been gone for a little while, but I suppose that's how, you know, life goes. And I'm just glad to be back here, and we'll get right into this week's topics.
Yeah, definitely. Apologize for the inconsistency, but trust me when I say that we have a couple faces that are perfectly made for podcasting. So, but yeah, good to see you. I think we're going to start in a pretty obvious place here. So, obviously it's the Thursday, April 22nd episode. And this week we had an incredible milestone. And I think kind of the buzz around the hockey world is this is one of those records that may never actually be broken. And that's Patrick Marleau setting the single regular season games played record. He just played in his 1,768th game, which passed Gordie Howe. He's now number one all time. Patty is 41 years old. Obviously, Gordie's professional career went very, very long, much longer than Patty's will probably go. But Patty reached an absolute epic milestone. The thing about that's amazing too about some of these games played records, and we've seen some pretty prestigious players hit 1,000 games this year. Obviously, like Patrick Kane being one of them. Doesn't include the playoffs, right? And I know people are going to laugh. You know, he's been on the Sharks for a long time. They never have quite got over the hump. But, I mean, in addition to those 1,768 regular season games he's played, and he's also played in 195 playoff games, so a record that will never be broken. He broke the record in Vegas. So they played the Knights, and it was super classy. Like, they gave him a standing O. He shook every player's hand. After the game, you usually only see handshakes in the playoffs at the end of a playoff series, but you had to acknowledge it. I mean, I think the consensus in the hockey world and the NHL is that, you know, he's a first-class guy. Definitely some tear-jerking moments. I mean, it still seems like he loves the game just as much as he did when he was a kid. Vegas handled the situation very classy, since it didn't take place at home in San Jose. But, Dan, I don't know where you want to jump in on this one, but I don't know if you want to debate his career, if he's a Hall of Famer, if you just want to acknowledge, you know, the milestone he set. Just what are your thoughts on Patty Marleau? Because I have some other thoughts too, but I want to let you get a word in edgewise.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I thought it was kind of cool that it was in Vegas. You know, I mean, obviously the Sharks the last few years haven't been, you know, kind of where they were when they went to the Cup and lost to Pittsburgh. But in the short, you know, brief time that Vegas has been around, they've sort of started a rivalry. Obviously, we've talked about it with, you know, coaches moving around. You know, Pete DeBoer obviously was the coach of the Sharks, and then he moved over to Vegas. Obviously, the Ryan Reeves and Evander Kane rivalry is and always will be, you know, kind of front and center for those two teams. I don't know. It was nice seeing it in Vegas, you know, and then the handshake lines and whatnot. You know, like you said, that usually only happens in playoffs, but you know, this time around it was a little bit different. And then just the, you know, the milestone itself is tremendous. And like you said, probably won't ever be broken, or at least, you know, maybe not, probably not in our lifetimes. So I think overall just really classy, really classy. It's a shame that he didn't get to do it in San Jose, and B, you know, it wasn't a full capacity stadium either way, regardless if it was home or away. But, yeah, I don't know. I think it's pretty great. As far as his career goes, you know, I would probably say he's up there for Hall of Fame. I mean, I know there's tons of players, you know, that haven't won cups that are always in, you know, the Hall of Fame talk. And I think he's probably, you know, another one I'm looking at it right now. You know, he's got 1,700 games. He's got 1,100 points, almost 1,200 points, actually. He'll hit 1,200 points this season, or at least he should. He literally needs four of them. So, you know, I would say, yeah, I know, you know, individual.
Well, he's got 8 through 45 games, so he'd be, it'd be the best stretch of his season if he gets right. But hopefully he gets 1,200. I'd love to see it.
Yeah. But, you know, I think he's in the Hall of Fame for sure. I mean, at some point you kind of trade out, you know, I know there's the whole like longevity talk and stuff like this. Well, this guy's literally broken the record for it. So I think he will. I think he was going to be in the Hall of Fame a couple of years back. I think he's pretty much, you know, been a lock. Maybe not as much as like, you know, Joe Thornton or something like that, but I'd say he's certainly up there. You know, like I said, over 1,000 points, over 1,500 games played, you know, basically been with San Jose's entire career. Not that that, you know, is any reason why someone should, excuse me, or should not be in the Hall of Fame, but, you know, still pretty impressive nonetheless. So, and I just like that, like I said, even though the rivalry with Vegas, it was done really well and the handshake lines and all that stuff. So I liked it. I thought it was really awesome.
I definitely think he's in the Hall of Fame for sure. I think, honestly, this definitely adds to it. I think without the record, he's probably a fringe. He's definitely like maybe not a first ballot guy, but a guy that gets in second, third go around type deal, I would say. I mean, maybe that's a hot take, but I think he's in without the record. And I just think this record basically like kind of seals the deal. Yeah, I think it solidifies it. The thing with him for me is like the record is so amazing because you have to be so good for so long and you have to have a bunch of like, I hate to say luck, but like I know taking care of your body, like things like that, that's not luck. But I mean, fluky shit happens in the game of hockey and really in all sports. And for him to never really have to deal with anything, to my knowledge, that was too serious is just a testament. I mean, it's a combination of luck and work ethic. And also it's a testament to how good of a player he was. Just, you know, to be able to get a job in the NHL and stick around for that many seasons is truly incredible. The other thing, too, with him is his impact on the game will be felt, I feel, for many years to come. I mean, you just look at his short stint in Toronto, and it's very apparent with some of the tribute videos and just, you know, when some of these guys earlier in their careers in Toronto, like guys like Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, like he was definitely huge as far as mentoring them, kind of entering the league with him there. And I think those guys lived with him, or at least one of them did. Like they're very, he's very much like a father figure to Marner and Matthews. So, you know, I think his impact on the league will be felt long beyond. I mean, obviously the one thing is, you know, you don't want to take away from anything he's done, but the one thing people will say about him is it's just a shame that he's never been able to hoist Lord Stanley. They got to a game six against Pittsburgh in 2016. You know, he's on Toronto. Unfortunately, they basically had to pay all those forwards all that money. They couldn't afford him anymore. And they got rid of him. And then he goes to Pittsburgh at the deadline, and they kind of, you know, have a bad few games against Montreal. And it's just the poor guy. You hate to say it, but it looks like that 2016 run with San Jose is going to end up being his best shot. To me, I could be wrong. I don't want to speculate, but this seems awfully – it feels a little bit like a swan song for me, where you're in San Jose, you didn't get traded at the deadline for one last shot to go, you know, win. You know, you only have 8 points through 45 games this year. Like, you broke the record as a Shark. Maybe that was intended. I get the sense that we might have a retirement coming up on our hands. I don't want to speculate, but just based on his production, the fact that maybe he wanted to break the record with the Sharks and just, I mean, his age, he really doesn't have anything left to prove other than if there's a team that's willing to let him sit in the press box for 40 games next year, play on the fourth line and, you know, just to go join a contender, or maybe comes back halfway through the year next year, something like that. Like, this also could be the end of his career. Like, he wrote it out long enough to break the record and now it's time for family. But I don't know. What do you think about that, Dan?
Yeah, no, I think you could be correct. You know, you look at it, and as impressive as it is, you know, you kind of look at it and you're like, how much more realistically can you have left in the tank? And who knows? Maybe he's got a ton left. I don't know. But yeah, it is kind of poetic, like you said, done in San Jose, the team that drafted him. You know, he came back after, you know, being away, like you said, with Toronto and whatnot. And I just wanted to touch on what you said about staying healthy and stuff like that. You know, we had noted that with Crosby and whatnot when he hit his 1,000th game, because I believe you brought up a stat, or I heard a stat somewhere where the amount of games that he had lost like with all of his concussion issues and whatnot, he had lost like 300 or something points. And so I think that's kind of the point that you're making is staying healthy like that. That's, I mean, there's a reason why Keith Yandel's Ironman streak is such a big deal and why it was such a big talk at the beginning of the year when he was kind of off with the practice squad on the Panthers that was maybe not, you know, maybe a little bit in the doghouse or people maybe speculated, you know, that's a huge deal. You know, and those are just two examples, Yans and Crosby, you know, missing out on all those points. And then Yans on the other end, you know, not missing any games. So I think that's definitely something that's commendable. And yeah, kind of like you said, it does seem very poetic. So kind of agree with you on all fronts there. So
yeah, let's move along. So congrats again to Patty Marleau. First class on and off the ice. Great career if this is it. Well, what a way to kind of ride off in the sunset to get that illustrious record under your belt in your last season. So we'll see, though. He could very well come back, but definitely just some speculation on my part. But, yeah. Next thing I want to talk about, a little bit of a fun thing. It's very random, but I saw the stat, and it was just, like mind-blowing in the sense of, like, I can't believe it's happened this many times. Like, since they've been collecting stats, and then the fact that Pittsburgh was able to play this poorly, but still, you know, for 20 minutes and still end up with a win. So, like, first of all, Pittsburgh won a hockey game in regulation 7-6. And you probably would look at it, like, on the periphery and you'd say, okay, well, okay, sure, maybe it's two really bad goaltenders in that game. You'd be correct, by the way, with Wedgwood and Jerry playing like shit in that game. Like, you'd be correct. And, yay, maybe congratulations, you know, if you had the over in that game or something like that. But the reason it's interesting and is that the Penguins were up 6-0 going into the third period. They surrendered 3 goals. Crosby scored the 7th goal, and then Pittsburgh gave up the next 3 to win 7-6. So, I mean, it was an absolute clusterfuck in the third period. There were 7 goals scored. Pittsburgh got outscored 6-1, which means they got outscored by 5 goals. Why is that important? Well, the Penguins, this is per ESPN stats and info, the Penguins are the first team in NHL history to win a game in which they were outscored by 5 goals in the third period. Entering tonight, NHL teams were 270-0 in the regular season and 0-9 in the postseason when they were outscored by 5 or more goals in the third period. So, really, I don't know. It was just, I just thought it was kind of an interesting share. I mean, I guess the good news is they played so well in the first two periods that they were able to just completely poop themselves in the third period and still win the game. But, yeah, I don't know. I think that also just, I don't know if you would want to lead this into some Pittsburgh talk, but they're about to potentially play, I believe, the Islanders, it would be, if things shake out a certain way in the first round of the playoffs in that East division. And tell you what, they better hunker down defensively. They've had some shaky goaltending the past couple of years, and I think it's just that's more so leading into that conversation. But yeah, any thoughts on the situation or Pittsburgh in general?
Well, stat-wise, yeah, you'd mentioned it off air, and obviously wanted to bring it up here, and yeah, that was pretty fun or funny to hear, just stuff like that. And I mean, it does make sense. Like, what are the chances that you would that you would win, you know, if you give up that many goals in the third? It's just that you scored 6 in the previous two. But yeah, especially against a team like the Devils, you know, if it had happened, maybe against a better team, like if it was a wild like barn burner against like the Caps or something like that, then okay, fine. Like, I can see that. Like, that happens all the time where two good teams, just either the players are on it, you know, with scoring, or the goalies are a little off. But you know, especially with a team like the Devils, who are second to last in front of only Buffalo, they're on a 7-game losing streak, by the way. That's kind of alarming, especially for a team that's in the playoff, very much in the playoff picture. They're, like you said, they're third. And yes, right now they play the Islanders, especially against a defensive minded team like that with Barry Trotz and how disciplined they are and how they counterattack and just kind of punish you that way. Being sloppy like that in the third is not going to get them very far. And that's something, like you said, they've been struggling with. Jari, they've kind of, you know, obviously they had Murray for a little bit. You know, and they dished him off to Ottawa, hoping that Jari could kind of take over that number one spot. And he's kind of been okay, but, you know, nothing where he needs to be, especially, you know, in the playoff picture, you know, where they're at. It's Washington, New York, Pittsburgh, and Boston. And these teams are all within 4 points of each other. So Pittsburgh could be playing, you know, literally any one of those teams. And honestly,
it's going to be fucking awesome. Like, that's going to be some great hockey. Like,
I'm really excited for it because obviously we don't know how that, like I just said, it's Washington is, and the Islanders have 62, Pittsburgh's got 61, Boston's got 58. So, I mean, this could literally end up any way, shape or form. And I'm excited for all those potential matchups. I just don't see Pittsburgh winning a series against any of those three teams right now.
I don't either. Right now, I don't know. They better get hot fast.
No, not at all. Yeah.
So exactly. The thing for those at home who might not have a standings sheet in front of them, like, I think the top four there is pretty much set. Like, I think it's pretty safe to say, like, those are going to be the four. And quite honestly, looking at that division before the year, I think we kind of thought, holy shit, like, that's going to come down to the wire. I mean, at this point, it's a matter of seeding with about, depending on who, which team you are, you got between 10 and 12 games left here in a 56-game season. But yeah. I'm actually, the thing I'm surprised about, you told me before the year those would be the fourth when it was all said and done. Sure. But for it to be pretty much, we know the four, it's just a matter of seeding with this many games left. A couple teams in that division just having some disappointing seasons. Like Philly. Philly. I mean, yeah, for sure.
I'm looking at it right now, and I don't know if either one of us did at the beginning of the year, but I
loved Philly. I thought they might go to the Cup.
Yeah, I'm 85% sure I had Philly very much in the playoffs, not just like squeaking in, but like in. And right now, they aren't even close. I definitely did not anticipate them to be kind of just average. So, yeah. And then the Rangers, obviously, now I know that they've got a whole rebuild going on. I think a lot of people, and I think me slash you potentially, could have seen them taking a bigger leap than they did this year as well. But, yeah, definitely not surprised that it's those four teams in. I'm just surprised at how, like, cut and dry it is between those four and the rest of the division. It's just –
I mean, for it to be this – for the four spots to – or the top four teams, let's say, to be this solidified at this point of the year is honestly shocking. Like, I mean, Philly and New York are done. Like, they're not making. Like,
no.
Now, they're not on Jersey or Buffalo's level. Pick on them again, like we do pretty much every podcast. But I'm sorry, we don't like picking on Buffalo. But
we really don't.
We love Chippewa Street, but it's just such a tough scene there. I think the other thing, quick note on Buffalo, and I didn't see that type of injury coming. I think we kind of figured, like, all right, Eichel's out now. You're not going anywhere. Might as well shut him down and get him back healthy and tank, or don't bring him back and let him get re-injured if you're going to basically, like, shop him this offseason, or if he ass out, one of the two. But, man, that was some tough news we got here. I don't know how many days ago that was, but definitely since we last recorded with that herniated disc diagnosis, sounds like he's going to be back for the start of next regular season or training camp, maybe even. But yeah, I mean, sucks to hear about Ike's injury being that serious. It sounds like even if Buffalo was competitive this year, he might not have even been able to come back anyway.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and I'm looking at an article, right? So it was March 7th. And yeah, I mean, like, geez Louise, Eichel's luck, you know? Like, just can't, you know, find that mojo with the Sabres. You know, obviously he's got it, but the rest of the team, you know, has just been super lackluster. You know, the last couple of years we thought they would be decent, and they've just underachieved. This year is obviously by far probably the worst. And then for it to be a season-ending injury like that, where, like you just said, even if they were competitive, it wouldn't matter. And there's a couple quotes, you know, just Granato and a couple other players just not really thinking that it was going to be season ending. I think they just thought it was kind of like, yeah, but
yeah, he got hurt March 7th, by the way. And then I think it was April 14th. They released what the injury
was. That's right. Yeah. Sorry.
Just to clarify. Yeah. Granato have to say?
I spoke. So this was a little while ago, but I spoke with him a couple days ago and he did not get into details. He felt good and was feeling better. I just don't think and believe that the injury would be season ending. So again, he kind of looked at it and was like, well, this isn't great, but you know, he'll be back. And as it turns out, it's just, no, we'll see you next year. So it just, you know, bad to worse, all that stuff. I mean, like you said, we don't really have to keep going into detail on it. We don't want to rag on them too much, you know, kick them while they're down, so to speak. So, but you know, obviously I hope that kid, you know, heals up. You know, he's an amazing hockey player. You know, and so to see him out, regardless if he's on a good Buffalo team or not, it's got to just be so heartbreaking for Sabres fans. Now they can't even watch, you know, their best player on the ice. So, what was the next topic you wanted to get into? I can't remember what we had set up.
We pretty much bring him up every episode, and you know, he's going to win the MVP this year. But that McDavid goal against Montreal. And the end of, like, I think it was just under 5 minutes to go in the third period, break a 1-1 tie, split in the 2D, little neutral zone turnover, and then that dude just hit the afterburner, splits two guys. I mean, he made it look so routine. It's like, you would tell, like, I'm sure there was so many, like, Rick from Red Deer was definitely on his couch, you know, hooting and hollering, and Jacques up in Montreal was screaming about getting in front of him there, but there's nothing you can do. He makes high-paid defensemen in the best league in the world look like fucking pylons. It's insane how routine he makes these plays look. I know we could repeat ourselves all day about how good this guy is, but like there's even moments with him that are just extra special. And I mean, that Toronto goal this year was probably his best. Like, I don't think that was even his best, like, individual play of the year, but it's a recent, you know, event, and just wanted to call it out. Might as well just call out same draft as Eichel if we're already on the same topic, but not trying to compare the two, because McDavid's, yeah, he's having such a stellar season. It's so great to see him, you know, be healthy and doing his thing. And, you know, here's the deal. Edmonton, they're firmly in the playoffs. It's just, we don't know if they're going to get that home ice advantage or if they're going to end up being in that 2-3 series with Winnipeg. It looks like they're going to play Winnipeg, and will they get that home ice or not? It's the big deal, but I don't know. Were you able to see that goal?
Yeah. And I wanted to highlight real quick, Puljujarvi, the hit kind of made the puck pop loose, which allowed McDavid to get it. But yeah, I mean, like you said, he's making a living, making really, really good NHL defensemen just look like absolute fools. And there's nothing you can do to stop it. Like, you try to hit him and he's strong on the puck, he's too fast half the time. So you have to work on your angles, and even that doesn't work, you know. And then just to be able to bury it too, you know, a lot of players can make really good moves, and then when they get to the goalie makes a great save, but he just, every single time, he buries it. But yeah, it is interesting to look at that North Division again. That's a really exciting division. I think, like you said, they've got a game in hand and a game in hand on Winnipeg, behind Winnipeg. So definitely interested to see how that, you know, will finish up at the end of the year. That's another division that's kind of, the four are roughly set in stone. I mean, unless Calgary somehow goes on a tear, there's no way it's going to be Montreal, Edmonton, Winnipeg, and Toronto. It's really just down to where Winnipeg and Edmonton are going to be. Montreal's probably going to be number four, and I don't really see Winnipeg catching Toronto. They're 4 points back, but so I'm assuming it's just going to be down, like you just said, between who gets home ice between Winnipeg and Edmonton, and that'll be a good series. That's one we haven't seen before. I'll definitely be interested in that. That would be such a fun series to watch too, with fans, you know, the whiteout for Winnipeg and then the crazy Oilers fans, you know, going back to Edmonton there. But that'll be a really, really entertaining series as well. But yeah, man, you just can't say enough about that guy. I mean, when doesn't he impress, you know? It's like he does it every night. It's not just him scoring a couple goals and you know, going home. It's goals that people are talking about, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks on end until he does another one. So can't say enough about the guy. Definitely MVP for sure. So.
Yeah, for sure. Just one quick note I want to make. I think, I mean, you're up there in Minnesota. I think Kaprizov's probably going to win the the Calder this year. But I mean, this Robertson kid in Dallas is absolutely lighting it up right now. He's on such a tear. He's damn near a point per game player. So just want to make a quick note of that, that I think he's playing well. Have you had a chance to see him play? Like, he's just super fast. He's super skilled. Dallas, I mean, they got Radulov out for like the rest of the year. So, you know, pretty wild. And just based on how they've played this year, like, he's basically like given them the offensive jolt that they've needed. Like, Sagan's missed a significant amount of time. Radulov's out now. Dallas hasn't really been playing that well. Definitely a little bit of a cup hangover. You know, a little bit of a cup hangover. But this Robertson kid, I think, is the real deal. And, I mean, that's just another weapon that team has moving forward. I think they're better than what their play indicates. They'll probably end up getting in the playoffs, which we'll discuss. We're going to move into the Hawks segment now. But any quick thoughts on Dallas? Or
nothing too much. I've seen him a little bit here and there, but I mean, mostly I haven't been able to see him just because I'm watching, you know, Kirill the Thrill, as you mentioned. And boy, that kid, again, another player that just, he's so entertaining to watch. We've said it numerous times, or at least I've said it numerous times on this podcast. He's just a breath of fresh air, you know, injecting new life, all those, you know, cliche phrases you can use for a player like him. Dynamic, you know, I can't wait to see them, you know, maybe make some moves and get some more pieces behind him. The chemistry between Kirill and Matt Zuccarello is tremendous. And I've always been a big fan of Zuccarello, you know, especially when he was on, you know, the Rangers, just because they were electric to watch when they were really, really good in the early 2010s and whatnot. You know, when they went to the Cup against the Kings, not a year that I want to talk about. Yeah, I mean, he's Kirill that says he's so good, man. Another, like I said, he's a guy that just, he's being creative. He's looking for open teammates. He's setting himself up, going to those quiet areas, and then he can do it himself. You know, if he needs to make a rush or anything like that, he's more than capable to do so. You know, he's super dangerous behind the net. You know, you just can't say enough about him. So I'm excited for Wild fan. You know, as a Hawks fan, you kind of have to not be excited for Wild fans, but there are so many more teams that I dislike in the Central than the Wild. I don't mind the Wild at all. I just don't like them when they play the Hawks. Obviously, I'm sure there are Hawks fans that are not happy with me saying that right now. But yeah, the Wild are actually pretty fun to watch, and they're pretty damn good this year. Their power play is complete ass, if we want to talk about power plays. But I mean, they're firmly in that third spot in the division, so it looks like they'll be playing Colorado, who they've kind of, I know they've beaten a few times, but they've also gotten their ass absolutely handed to them a couple times too this year. So I would imagine Colorado would win that one, but that's kind of where that one's looking as we, you know, it seems as we've looked kind of at all the divisions outside of the Hawks division, which, like you said, we'll get into pretty soon. But, you know, they look pretty firmly in that spot. Same thing with Colorado and Vegas, obviously. I guess, yeah, they could be playing Vegas since Colorado is only 2 points back. The interesting spot is going to be Arizona and St. Louis. They've got a point between them, 45 and 44, but St. Louis is 3 games in hand. So that'll be interesting up to the finish. We'll see how they've been doing. The Blues, another team, you mentioned Dallas with their cup hangover. I feel like the Blues very much fit that category too, except obviously they were able to, you know, kind of take care of it and actually win the damn cup. But yeah, anyway, just one Central team to another. You want to talk about the Blackhawks?
Yeah, or I'm just going to set it up. Yeah, let's wrap up the show here with the Blackhawks. So, I mean, they're now in sixth in the Central Division. So Dallas has jumped them. They're 3 back of Dallas. Dallas has a game in hand. They lost the first of 3 straight that they play against Nashville, got brutally outplayed. I mean, they gave up 41 seconds of the third period on Tuesday against in Nashville. Now they shift to Chicago. So, I mean, we're recording before the second of 3 in a row, so we don't know the result of that game. But, yeah, they've got a game in hand on Nashville, but they're 4 back. So, I mean, obviously that last game was a game that's 2.5. Yeah, I mean, I just think the power play has definitely kind of gone off the cliff. Like, that was kind of their strength at like the beginning of the year. I think the defense has played horrible. I think it's a combination of Lincoln's kind of come down to earth a little bit, but at the same time, your defense has to play better in front of them. I mean, we've seen Keith make some uncharacteristic plays. Zadorov has not been good. I mean, Boquist got concussed recently. Kalinuk's a young kid. I mean, we knew the deadline moves weren't they weren't moves to go all in, go all in on this year. But so, like, you know, one of those things where, you know, what can you say anymore? The defense has definitely let them down. And I really think Kirby Doc's snake, but like, I think he's going the right areas. But I just hope that kid can get can bury a couple before the end of the year.
Yeah, I think confidence wise for him, it would be nice to see him do that. Obviously, like you just said, we know that this isn't going to be a year where they do anything. You know, and certainly this month has been quite brutal, and it all started with April Fool's. You know, yeah, losing two straight, then beating Dallas, and then you know, they kind of just, they win one, they lose one, and then, you know, to split against Detroit like that and then lose 5-2 against Nashville is pretty brutal, like you said. As far as Doc goes, yeah, I know he's taking a lot of shit online because I think he's got about 12 games in and he's only got a handful of points. Listen, like, the guy started midseason. He's coming back from a wrist injury. He's probably pretty ginger with it too. I mean, if you remember how the injury occurred, it was super fluke where you didn't even think that a collision like that would cause a broken wrist. So, you know, he probably is a little bit nervous to take some contact. I probably would be too if I broke my wrist. Obviously, you know, like we said, it's not like they're going to do anything this year. So for him, it's just try and get back in the groove of things. I know the season's wrapping up, but get some of that confidence under you. And, you know, at the end of the year, maybe he can say, well, I didn't really play that much, but, you know, at least at the end of the year, I finished strong, you know, blah, 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 blah. You know, and then he gets some much needed rest, and gets that wrist back to 100% if it's not already 100% right now. You know, and then he attacks the next year, you know, that much better. So, I just don't understand giving a kid like that shit. Especially when he's coming back from a big injury like that, where you thought he was going to be out for the whole year and he turns up, you know, to come back for a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, the Hawks have a lot to figure out. You kind of talked about Lincoln, you know, coming back down to earth, and what you said, I mean, makes perfect sense. You know, if he's standing on it, you know, the defense has always been pretty brutal. There's been a lot of holes there. There've been a lot of mistakes, like you said, but at least at the beginning of the year, the goaltending was there to kind of bail him out, obviously. And now that he's kind of come back down to earth, it's not so much there anymore. And that's why they're losing games 4-3, 4-2, 5-1, 4-1. They're not losing games 1-0 or 2-1 or 3-2. They're giving up a ton of goals pretty much every single game. In fact, they haven't, the only game that they've given up less than three goals was a 3-0 loss to the Predators on the 3rd of April. So that kind of lets you know, all you need to know is, yeah, the goaltending might not be as impressive as it was at the beginning of the year, but certainly there are issues going on with the defense if they're scoring 4 and 5 goals every single night. So we'll see if tonight's any different.
Yeah. I hope so, man. Like, they need it. So. Like, I think it's pretty much. Yeah. I mean, they need, if they have any one iota hope to make the playoffs, they have to win the next two. Now, yeah. You can't give Nashville even a loser point. You have to get 4 out of 4. Exactly. You got to get 4. And then you got to hope that Dallas, I mean, but it's looking bleak for the Hawks. I mean, they got to play Florida and Tampa here before the year ends. So,
which is fine, because even if they did make the playoffs, it's like, who cares? They're going to lose any, like, not to be that pessimistic person, but, you know, it's kind of one of those things. You look at any of those teams and they're outmatched 9 times. Yeah, I mean, yeah, they beat the Hurricanes. Yeah, they beat Tampa. Yeah, they beat Florida, all of them. But they're not going to beat them consistently. Not with you know, Lankinen not absolutely standing on his head and all the holes on the defense. It's just not going to happen. So for me, I hate to say it, it's almost like throwing the towel, so to speak. But anyway, that's kind of where they're at. We're just kind of crawling to the finish instead of sprinting. So
100%, man.
But
yeah, 100%. Well, we'll see. I mean, it's been kind of a tough stretch here, but I mean, like, we knew this team wasn't going to compete for a cup, but I was hoping it would kind of come down more so to the wire. So hopefully they can pull out a couple here. But if not, like, shit, we'll just hope we get a good spot in the draft. So either way, we'll spin zone it as fans and loyal podcasters. So I think that's it for our episode now. Dano, thanks for joining. And we will certainly link next week, and we'll let the folks know when that's going to be. But I'm hoping for roughly around a week from now, and potentially might have someone else from SOT joining us, depending on some scheduling. So we actually might add a third head for the first time in a while to a third set of brains to the operation, at least for one episode, maybe even for a little more moving forward. We'll see. But Dan, thanks for joining, and thanks for everyone for listening.
Absolutely, brother. Good night, everybody, and we'll see you next week.